The Fan on Demand. Go ahead. Poke the Blair. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
It's the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, in for Jeff Blair. That's Jeff Salmon. My name is George Russick. Straight ahead on the show, Ben Wagner, the voice of your Buffalo Bisons. Ryan Goins, Aaron Sanchez. The call up to the big club. We'll talk to Ben and how he fights fires in Buffalo on a daily basis. And Campy Russell, studio analyst, director of the alumni relations for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Hey, Cleveland's had a big year, if you didn't know. Big summer, big offseason.
A big offseason, yeah.
Got Andrew Wiggins, that guy LeBron James. It's pretty good to be Cavaliers fan. And a Cleveland sports fan in general.
Who would have thought they'd win the lottery? They'd be able to draft Andrew Wiggins, and then he'd be the hot trade rumor in the offseason. My goodness, what a fun offseason to talk about
the
in
city
the
of
NBA.
Cleveland on fire. Johnny Manziel, the most popular jersey sold since April. Johnny Football.
That's
and
amazing.
He's not even the starting quarterback right now.
Hasn't played
but
a game
the Maple
yet.
Leafs constantly making news in this city. Well, at least this week anyway. Cody Franzen signs a one-year deal worth $3.3 million avoiding arbitration. James Reimer has his hearing on Monday. And to talk about that, he covers the Maple Leafs for the Toronto Star. Kevin McGran joins us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Kevin, thanks for doing this. Are you expecting the same sort of deal with James Reimer that maybe the Leafs and Reimer will meet somewhere in the middle, or could this potentially get ugly during the arbitration hearing?
I don't imagine either side will let it get sort of crazy. I think exactly what they did with France and sort of cut it down the middle and everybody move on and have a peace at camp, I think, is kind of the ideal situation. James Reimer, I know he wants to be traded. I know he wants it to be number one goalie somewhere. I think he's got to kind of look around at the 29 other teams and kind of decide for himself whether he can truly beat out any of those guys for a job and whether any of those players, any of those teams would really want to give up assets to get him. And I know the Leafs right now, they look around and they go, well, is there really a better backup out there? We don't have anybody else in our system. So for both sides, a compromise, I think, is really what's on the table.
Now, does he have a good arbitration case? Of course, talking about James Reimer, I mean, normally, wouldn't they look at numbers and not necessarily video? And he has a career 914 save percentage and a winning record. However, going against Reimer is his past season, which was not a good one.
Well, they can make their case any way they really want to. If they want to bring up the numbers, they will. If they want to bring up wins and losses or performance, they will. I mean, it's up to the arbitrator ultimately to decide and who's the comparable. I know James Reimer, no matter what, is going to get at least what he got last year, probably a bit more. And that's, you know, maybe the going rate. I don't know specifically what he's asking for. But I do know one thing, and this will be an intriguing one to watch. If they do come to an agreement, and maybe they go even more than 1 year, he becomes a more tradable player. The chances of him getting out of Toronto are better if he's under a deal in which it's palatable to the other 29 teams.
Kevin, I understand that, but I don't think we've ever seen a landscape in the NHL where goaltending has been such a low value either on the trade market or in free agency.
It is kind of weird how the worm turns, isn't it? Because for a while ago, it was, you know, sign your goalies up long-term and lock them up and give up every asset you possibly can to get one. I mean, we saw Steve Yzerman chase goaltending for years in Tampa. I mean, this team chased goaltending for years until it got Jonathan Bernier. And now all of a sudden, it seems like goalies are a dime a dozen. That there's, you know, Los Angeles and Anaheim are churning them out at such a fast rate that, you know, other teams can't keep up in getting them. It's kind of weird that way. And another weird thing this year was the number of centers that were available, like impact centers. And you know, for years you couldn't get one, and this year you know they're going dime a dozen.
Well, Kevin, the idea of a 2-year deal for James Reimer is interesting on a number of levels, and you talk about whether that could be a more attractive contract deal from another team's standpoint, but does that give the Leafs leverage over Jonathan Bernier next offseason when he becomes an RFA himself?
It does, depending on how well James Reimer performs if he stays with them all year. But yeah, that certainly can be a factor. We've seen the Leafs for the most part under Dave Nonis, not entirely, but we've seen them toe the line on salary escalation. They've, you know, outside of perhaps the deal for David Clarkson, he's pretty much gotten deals that are decent enough. Certainly with your mid-range and low-end players, he's not giving up the farm. He knows he needs cap space. And any leverage that you have in that situation in order to maybe keep Jonathan Bernier down when he comes due next summer is certainly part of the bigger picture, although not necessarily that big a part right now as far as Reimer is concerned.
And this is assuming, of course, that James Reimer would accept a two-year deal with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Perhaps he just wants to sign for 1 year, prove his worth, and maybe hit the open market as UFA if he sticks around long enough.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm personally of the opinion that it's better to sign players to short-term deals. I'm wary of giving the long-term deals for the big money because players tend to kind of relax. They're not as hungry. It's just part of human nature. So guys on short-term deals that are always out to prove themselves, I think, are better for everybody involved, really, in terms of the product on the ice.
Kevin McGrane on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff. I'm George. Kevin, when it comes to James Reimer, a lot of the talk was, did we see this past April, did we see James Reimer for the final time in a Maple Leafs uniform? And maybe it would be the best for the Leafs and James Reimer if we did see him for the final time in blue and white. Kevin, what's changed since then, really?
Well, they don't have another backup goalie. They don't have another quality NHL goalie. I mean,
Drew McIntyre, was he really that dependable where you can say, yeah, you can slot him into a guy who's only made one career NHL start? You would have been comfortable with having that guy as your backup?
Well, a large portion of Leaf Nation would have been based on the play with the Marlies, but I think that's one of the reasons that Randy Carlyle kept going to James Reimer during the bad times there when the team sort of dropped 12 to 16 or whatever the finals numbers were. They kept going to him because they weren't comfortable going to a career AHLer. They go with the guys that brung you. And, you know, they are kind of stuck in a way. They're stuck with each other for better or worse, and I think they're going to have to find a way to make it work.
In looking at the arbitration process between Reimer and the Leafs, should they get there, from a Leafs perspective, as long as Reimer gets less than $3.5 million, and we all expect that that's going to be the case, Leafs can't walk away, right?
Wow, you're getting me on the technical issues of the collective bargaining agreement. There is walkaway provisions. I don't know exactly when they kick in.
Okay.
Kevin, when you talk about goaltending, and there's some tantalizing veterans still out there, we still don't know what the future holds for one Martin Brodeur, and we heard earlier that Brendan Shanahan had some mutual interest in the guy like Martin Brodeur, and Tim Thomas is still out there, Ilya Bryskalov, Thomas Vokoun, Nikolai Habibulin. You could probably get one of these guys at least on the very cheap. Wouldn't that be a better road to take to give the reins to a guy like Bernier, so he's not challenged at all, and we don't have that distraction with Randy Carlyle and Reimer, and Reimer thinking that he still could potentially be the number one goalie. Wouldn't ultimately that be just a better road to take for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, how do you get to that road? Do you just walk away from James Reimer? Do you just give him away? I mean, like, you have an asset there, and you have an asset that it's controllable, to borrow a baseball term.
Right.
And if he plays well, then you've got an asset, and other guys get hurt in the league, you've got something you can turn into something more so than you can with a Martin Brodeur or an Ilya Bryskalov or any of those guys. What's wrong with competition? I like competition. I really don't think it was a factor outside of, it was a bit of a factor that those two guys competed with each other, and the Leafs talk about creating competition for jobs, and if Reimer is pushing Bernier to be better, so be it. Let it be. You know, the only reason there's really and truly a controversy is the way Randy Carlyle deals with the media with goaltenders, in that he never says which one is going to play the next day. You kind of have to watch the practice, and that's a whole, like, so we watch the practice, and then we know who done it, who's going to play. But it's a weird thing on Randy's part. I don't understand why coaches like to keep these things a secret. It seems ultimately pointless to me. It's like trying baseball to figure out which starter is going to start tomorrow. You kind of know you have your rotation. I don't think you walk away from anybody as young and as talented as James Reimer just to put an end to a goaltending controversy. I think you want as much competition for jobs on this team, as I don't think this is going to be a very good team at all. You want as much competition as possible to bring out the best in players, because they are competitive by nature.
Kevin, there was a school of thought out there that maybe James Reimer would be dealt around the NHL draft. And is he really that much more attractive with maybe a two-year deal, or being a guy who's still a restricted free agent? There would be really that much more, you know, he would be worth more on the trade market having a two-year deal. I just don't see it. Do you?
Well, if the number's at the right price and it fits under a team's salary cap, then that's a problem they don't have to worry about. Like if he's an RFA and he has a great year, well then you're going to have to pay a little bit more. But if he's has a great year but he's only going to get $2.5 million, he's not going to ask for 3.5 or 4.5. Then you've got yourself a problem solved for another year. I think general managers truly value players under contract at manageable terms.
Are the Toronto Maple Leafs waiting on their negotiations with James Reimer to ultimately figure out who's going to be backing up Jonathan Bernier? Like the idea of going outside the organization to bring in a goaltender, are they waiting on that to see what the numbers are with Reimer?
I would say that's exactly what they're doing. I think his arbitration hearing is Monday, so they really don't have to make the call until after that arbitration hearing of what they're going to do with James Reimer. If, like you said before, if the number is too high, they can actually walk away from it. I don't think that's going to be the case, and I don't think that's going to happen. But if they do come to some sort of deal and they can actually move him, then they can bring in a seasoned backup, then they can do that. There's no reason to get a third goalie at this point, a third goalie with NHL experience at this point, until you see what the numbers are with James Reimer.
Kevin, well, we saw the Cody Franzen contract yesterday, 1 year, $3.3 million. The perpetual cycle of signing Cody Franzen to a one-year deal continues. But to me, this case is a little odd that clearly that's an asset the Maple Leafs can move around the trade deadline. But if the Maple Leafs were close to a playoff spot, fighting for a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference, I just don't see them trading Cody Franzen, do you?
I guess it does depend on what kind of season they're having. But, yeah, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year at this time, or July 1st. So you have to know whether you're going to be committed to him long-term the way you are to Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel, or whether he's basically a replaceable part the way, Paul Ranger and Mark Frazier were replaceable parts. I think the jury's kind of still out on Cody Franzen because he's such a tantalizing offensive defenseman. But for a big guy, he doesn't play physical enough. And I think a lot of teams look at him and wonder why not. And I think that's just his nature. So Cody Franzen is what he is. He's a pretty good defenseman. He's a very good offensive defenseman. He can get the pucks through. And then what's the bottom line price for that? The one thing the Leafs keep telling me is that they are very, very deep on the blue line with the Marlies. So if it's not Cody Franzen that's moved at the trade deadline or something like that, it will be one of their prospects. And it depends which direction they're going. Are they going to be a playoff contender that they need some help up front or some other position, and then maybe you trade a Stuart Percy or a Petter Granberg? Or are they a team that's going the other direction? And there's no point in having too many veterans around, and you can give the kids a chance. So maybe the veterans can launch you some draft picks or some future prospects. The fence is the one spot where they are very, very content with how the Marlies are producing players, and I don't think any of the defensemen, except for maybe Dion Phaneuf, should necessarily feel safe for the long term.
Kevin, if you're another NHL team and you see Cody Franzen being paid 1 year at $3.3 million, I mean, depending on whatever that team is in their situation, would you say that would be a contract and a player that you would be willing to acquire?
Well, I think if you think you're a cup contender and you're a defenseman away, I don't think you necessarily even look at the numbers. I think at $3.3 million at the trade deadline, under the cap, it's only going to be it'll be less than $1 million. So most teams will be able to afford that. If you're a cup contender and Cody, you think Cody Franzen's the difference, then yeah, you're gonna make a play for him. But again, if the Leafs are in contention, I don't see them moving anybody off their roster, and they'd probably add a player or two.
He covers the Leafs for the Toronto Star, Kevin McGrane. Kevin, thanks for jumping on today.
Hey, no problem, guys. Anytime.
It'd be interesting as well with what he was talking about with Reimer and asking him about the Toronto Maple Leafs waiting on the numbers with Reimer to make a decision on who the backup goaltender is going to be on this club. Perhaps other teams that might be maybe thinking about Reimer as a possibility on their club, say Winnipeg, for example.
And that seems to be the team that just makes the most sense.
Yeah, so say you're the Winnipeg Jets and you've got eyes for James Reimer. Maybe you don't want to go through this negotiating process. Maybe you want to let the Leafs go through it and just see what the contract is going to be and then say, all right, I'll go for him now. Maybe other NHL teams want to find out more about the numbers with James Reimer before they're willing to give him a shot.
I just don't know what James Reimer's value is on the trade market. I don't think it's that great. And when people think that, oh, maybe the Leafs can shore up their problem at center by trading James Reimer, that's not going to be the case. When we see somebody like Ryan Miller not fetch that much on the trade market, well, what is really James Reimer worth? Really? I just don't see the Maple Leafs maybe getting an impact player back in a James Reimer deal. Potentially some draft picks, but we've just seen goaltending as a whole just not as valued like it used to. It just seems to me that a lot of Leaf fans are under this notion that, well, James Reimer will sign a contract and he's worth something and we'll get something good in return. Not so fast. To me, that just reeks of a draft pick deal for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I just really think that if somebody out there, if an NHL team out there saw James Reimer as a number one or a possible number one, he'd be with them right now. That's right. What I think. They would have jumped all over that.
It's 10:17 on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Salmon. My name is George Russick. Joining us now on the line, he's the voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Always a friend of the show, Ben Wagner, joins us here on the Jeff Blair Show. Ben, thanks for jumping on today. We get the call from Shai Davidi today, the tweet that Ryan Goins and Aaron Sanchez coming up to the big club. Talk about, you've had a chance to see Aaron Sanchez as close as possible. Talk about how electric his stuff really is and what Blue Jay fans should be excited about seeing him pitch sooner than later with the Jays.
The last couple of starts that we saw in Buffalo, plus even the two appearances out of the bullpen, were just as electric as what put him on the map in the forefront of everybody's mind coming out of spring training. The other thing that a lot of Blue Jay fans saw in Montreal, fastball at 96, 97 miles an hour, plenty of tilt on it, the two-seam sinker, induces a lot of ground balls, the swing and miss, curveball, firm changeup, all that stuff came together right before the All-Star break. Then on Thursday, he was informed that he was going to the bullpen, and it was a role that he clearly embraced. And he said, whatever I need to do to make it to that next level, and if this is the step that the Blue Jays want, knowing that there could always be some inning caps in the minor leagues, it made a lot of sense to him. He understood it. He embraced the role, and last time out in Pawtucket when he threw on Sunday, it was even better than his previous relief outing.
So, Ben, I think what I'm hearing is that two relief appearances with the Buffalo Bisons, that's enough for the Blue Jays to have looked at his performance and say, yeah, he's ready. He's worth a shot at this point.
And I think the situation, too, at the big league level also maybe sped up the case. When I talked to Aaron and kind of got a feel for what they were planning to do over the next week, it was pitch him inning, go to with two off days to see how the body responds, throw him out there again, pitch an inning, give him a couple of days again, just to see how the transition from throwing every fifth day works against his body or for his body and see if the stuff is there with the life as well. And that second outing, it was there. I mean, he pounded the zone with two seamers and just a great set of ground balls. It was a quick 1-2-3 inning facing the minimum. So I think that stuff clearly, plus the situation that the Blue Jays may find themselves in right now, will lead to them making the move.
Ben, what we're hearing, and we had Kevin Barker on to kick off the show, he goes, because of these big series with the Orioles and the Red Sox and the Yankees, that you want to bring up a guy that these teams have never seen. Are you expecting instant success at a guy like Aaron Sanchez, or should we maybe curb our excitement a little bit and say, yeah, he is a rookie and he's going to face big league hitters for the first time?
Well, I think you need to remember that he's 22 years of age, right, and he's going to be very excited about the opportunity. And it was a very similar situation before he even had the birthday when he arrived in Buffalo, and he admitted his emotions got the best of him. He was really amped up before his AAA debut. He was flying wide open. He said his heart rate was just jumping out of his chest when he was on the mound. If he can calm himself down and wrap his mind around the entire situation and take a big, deep breath and soak it in, before he lets that first pitch fly, he's got every possibility in the world to make it a successful transition. Are there going to be bumps? Yeah, you're going to see that all the time. I mean, you see it with the veteran guys too. But I think Blue Jay fans should be really excited about the place that Aaron Sanchez is right now as a pitcher in terms of a development to make this jump.
Well, in 34 and a third innings, he struck out 27, but he walked 17. Is the walk situation just that, a situation for you?
It was a situation, but it was also tapered down towards the tail end of his appearances in Buffalo. And good. I think that's what you need to look at. Not the overall number versus the innings, but how it's improved start by start. The first three times he went out of the mound, I think it was four individual walks in those ball games, and it turned around to hurt him as well. I mean, he did not log a winning decision. It's always not about wins and losses at the minor league level, especially when you're dealing with pitch counts and inning caps and all that stuff. But the fact that he was able to harness the control, make a couple of little adjustments when he's been on the mound, and rely more on contact versus just trying to blow the ball by people, and understand that outs are outs, regardless of how you get them. And he had the swing and miss stuff. I mean, I'm not going to deny that as well. He had the strikeout totals to go along with it. But I think, you know, the important thing to look at here is the last handful of starts that he was able to make in Buffalo, and plus then the transition and the way he responded in terms of his body and his arm. He felt free and easy, and he looked at me yesterday, and when I asked about how he felt, and he enthusiastically said, I feel good. So that's great news.
He's the voice of the Bisons, Ben Wagner, here on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff, I'm George. Ben, how would you compare when Marcus Stroman made the jump from Buffalo to the Blue Jays to when Sanchez now making the jump to the big club? Are they very similar to how they looked coming out of Buffalo to you, or was there some difference?
Well, that's a loaded question, because when Marcus Stroman got promoted, his last outing in Buffalo, it was a raw day, and he fired six no-hit innings against Louisville in his last start. And he knew he would be capped at 80 pitches in preparation of a potential call-up. So it's tough to compare where Stroman was before that initial call-up and six no-hit innings to where Aaron, you know, leaves the Bisons after a relief outing. But I will say this. I mean, the stuff is electric, and you're excited to hear about a young prospect, somebody with a great future in front of him, and plus the makeup that Stroman possesses. Aaron Sanchez has a lot of the same makeup in terms of where he is mentally, how he deals with the media, how he's been given in situations, his ability to adapt when he's on the mound, and, of course, how he relates to his teammates. And I think there is no bigger component that may be important to the transition of the minor league life now to the major league life, and that's having Marcus Stroman already kind of been shown the ropes over the last couple of months to help the transition for Sanchez move along quicker and easier for him as he tries to get his feet wet, because they are very close. They're very good friends, and there's no doubt the first one waiting on Aaron Sanchez to arrive in the clubhouse, whenever he gets there, will be Marcus Stroman.
Oh, and Twitter would be a good indication of that, as Stroman this morning tweeted, shout to my brother Aaron Sanchez, couldn't be more proud. Now let's get it pop, hashtag dream chase. Then he tweeted, my guy Ryan Goins coming back too. Twitter is filled with good news today. And they want to talk about Goins in a moment. But just a name that we don't mention as far as the Blue Jays bullpen, and how he would have been of, I think, a big help to the Blue Jays bullpen, as he had been in the past, Neil Wagner. And he's been injured this year, and it really is too bad that he's been out of the mix, because I'm a big fan of Wagner's, and I was really hoping that he could be part of that Blue Jays bullpen mix this year, but obviously injuries say otherwise.
Yeah, he got injured, and he left the club. He's been down in Florida, from my understanding, as well. And, and the reports that I've been reading, I'm sure the same was as you guys, Shadavidi, had reported that he was going to be shut down for 3 weeks and then start a return-to-pitch program and then start to build back up that way. So clearly the talent is there. You know the stuff is there, and including a triple-digit fastball it can register in. So they're being very careful on how they approach to make sure that Neil gets back on the mound the right way, the safe way, so he can avoid going under the knife and maybe even get back on the mound this season.
Ben, obviously, Ryan Goins making his return up to the Blue Jays. Apparently, it could be a very short stint. But talk about how he's bounced back with the Bisons. Maybe a bit of a slow start, but his game has really turned around with Buffalo. Just talk about his perseverance this season in AAA.
And it was. He had really to make an adjustment at the plate. He had to figure out what kind of hitter he needed to be at the dish, and he was going to get a ton of at-bats with Buffalo and play day in and day out. And he was in the lineup every single day, maybe playing short one day, maybe back-to-back days, but never more than 3 days in a row because they needed to keep him at shortstop and fresh at second base. So he would flip-flop a lot when Munenori Kawasaki was down here, plus Jonathan Diaz, who's currently here. So they've been seesawing back and forth pretty much at a 50-50 clip. But at the plate, that's where it's really been impressed with Ryan Goings. Here's a guy 2 years ago that led the Eastern League in hits with 158, hit his way to even get on the map from a shortstop position in Buffalo a season ago, knowing that he had to be improved at the plate to even get a sniff, which he did. And then, now this year, because it didn't translate at the major league level, he felt the pressures, came down, and it's been a little bit of a bumpy ride at the beginning, but this is the perfect time to see where Ryan Goings is, because he's not only putting together the hits that come along with it, multi-hit performances, he had two more last night, for example, but he's also getting quality at bats. He's not getting overmatched. He's not diving and opening up in the strike zone when he's seeing a lot of off-speed stuff, changeups coming in. He's on time with a lot of the pitches, and he's really seeing the ball well. He's putting together a ton of quality at bats, and he's been able to get on base.
He led off last night. Is that something he's been doing a lot of?
Not recently, no. He's only been doing that really since the end of the All-Star break and after Anthony Ghost got promoted too. He spelled in that leadoff slot. They tinkered a little bit with it with Kevin Pillar in the leadoff slot as well here in Buffalo. The Bisons had a really, really tough patch trying to score runs, and I think Gary Allenson tried to shake things up a little bit just to get this offense moving. Kevin Pillar and Ryan Goings were really the only two guys that had any sort of success in the lineup over the last 10 days, wrapping around the All-Star break. And even since Brad Glenn came back down from the big leagues, he was the guy that was hitting .377 in AAA, but he's really been in a funk after coming back down. So those were really the only two guys that were doing any sort of producing in the Bison's lineup. So it had to be maneuvered a little bit to balance it out. And when Gogo went to the top of the order, he definitely didn't miss a beat. I mean, he's had a great road trip so far coming out of the All-Star break.
Ben, clearly Ryan Goings had to go down to work on his defense.
yeah, right. He hasn't committed an error in 2 months. Yeah.
Wow.
The Buffalo has been spoiled with how well the defense has played all the way around the diamond. I mean, Dan Johnson plays a very good first base. Slick with the glove around the bag as well. I mean, Munenori Kawasaki's been here, spectacular plays. Jonathan Diaz, as Blue Jay fans have already seen at the major league level, he's been able to do that day in and day out of the lineup. And then Ryan Goings as well. I mean, there was, I think it was 75 consecutive games where he didn't commit an error last year when he was in Buffalo. Mm. And he's got a heck of a streak going right now. May 31st is the last time he booted a ball.
Wow. Oh, what a stiff. Now, talking about Brett Wallace, 3-for-5 yesterday. How have you enjoyed him?
Brett broke out yesterday. It was a little bit tough of a start. Went 0-for-8, hit a couple of balls well. But in the small sample size since arriving with the Bisons, Brett's been a nice addition, and he's got the power, you know, the thump that he had last year. He had 24 combined home runs, and that's what the Bisons need right now from a AAA perspective, is a little bit more pop in the lineup since Dan Johnson got summoned to the big leagues. So it's a nice addition, and he played defensively at first base last night as well. So that's a nice little transition and something else Gary Allenson can mix in.
Ben, I saw on Twitter today that the Bisons feel like the days when they were affiliated with the Cleveland Indians, that all these guys just coming up to try to help the big club, to try to nurse them into a playoff spot. Is that the feeling around Buffalo right now? It's reminiscent of their connection with the Cleveland Indians?
Well, here's the good news for Blue Jay fans. While all that was happening, the Indians were making the playoffs, and so were the Buffalo Bisons, who had a run.
Yeah,
14 years of making the playoffs, 11 years in that 14-year window. So not only was the big club performing, so is the minor league club at the AAA level and breeding that success. And the insurance policy for the Blue Jays is Buffalo, bottom line. I mean, that AAA team, regardless of the season and regardless of what's going on and the successes and the losses, that's the insurance policy for the big league club if there is a need, whether it's out of the bullpen, whether you need a spot starter, or you need somebody to go in and earn a promotion and maybe never even appear again at the minor league level. That's from a development standpoint, plus then what are the needs of a major league club, and that's why the 40-man roster is so important and why you're allowed to shuttle guys back and forth, up and down all season long, as Chad Jenkins has also learned.
Yeah, well, absolutely, and it's been great to be able to have the Blue Jays have that access with the Buffalo Bisons in the close proximity, but also to be able to have access to you, Ben, at a moment's notice. Radio voice of the Buffalo Bisons, Ben Wagner. It's always a pleasure having you on, pal. Thanks for this.
Thanks for getting me up early.
Oh, well,
nice to talk to you guys when the sun's out.
It's our pleasure. We'll call you at 3 a.m. next time, all right?
It's about, yeah, right.
Looking sure. forward to it. There's Ben Wagner, yeah. The Buffalo Bisons radio voice. By the way, we were talking Toronto Maple Leafs earlier in the hour. In about 45 minutes or so,
yeah.
Marley's head coach, Gordon Dineen, is going to join us.
Yeah, and again, a guy who has to, you know, deservedly so, Gordon Dineen finally gets a chance to coach the Marlins.
Just promoted, so we're going to find out.
When you look
that.
At a guy like Steve Spott as well, when you guy like Steve Spott as well, already, you know, head coach of the Marlins one season and promoted to be the assistant GM, assistant head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Big news, breaking news out of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Both Dave Poulin and Claude Loisel now out as assistant GMs of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Big front office shuffle of the Leafs. Kyle Dubas is a new assistant GM. This is Shanahan making a first front office shakedown. So both Dave Poulin, who was on the radio station this morning, and Claude Loisel, both out as assistant general managers of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kyle Dubas, I believe that's how you say his name, is now as the new assistant GM to Dave Notice. Big news coming out of Maple Leaf land. Hopefully we'll have somebody on later on in the show to talk about these moves. Ooh. And just like that, snap of a finger changes a brew in Maple Leaf land. Kind of out of the blue, we never thought that they would kind of make a change at the assistant GM. But clearly, Shanahan and Notice have a new vision for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And here we are, Jeff. All of a sudden, bam, Dave Notice has two of his right-hand men gone. The Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, whatever we have left in the show, obviously we'll adjust it to see if we can investigate a little bit more and find out more of the reasoning why the Toronto Maple Leafs have made this kind of a shakeup. I think you're right about that, but we'll find out more and see if we can investigate a bit more as to why these moves have happened with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the timing of it as well.
Yeah, Sportsnet's Chris Johnson tweeting it out. Claude Loisel and Dave Poulin have been dismissed by the Maple Leafs. Kyle Dubas named assistant Dubas named assistant GM to Dave Notice. So big changes in Maple Leaf land just out of nowhere.
I'm trying to call Chris
all of a sudden. See if we can get Chris Johnson on the line. And if he's surprised by these moves, I don't think we heard anything of the sort that the Maple Leafs would be making a front office shuffle, and then all of a sudden, bam. News comes out, and the Maple Leafs have two new assistants.
There it is. There's live radio for you, folks.
We're going to talk to Campy Russell, studio analyst and director of alumni relations for the Cleveland Cavaliers, straight ahead, and we'll try to get Chris Johnson of Sportsnet on as well, as the Maple Leafs have a front office shuffle. That's straight ahead on the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Salmon. My name is George Russick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right. Now dig this, baby. You don't care for me. I don't care about that. You got a new fool. I'd like to laugh at. I am only one to burn it.
The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, in for Jeff Blair. That's Jeff Sammet. Close. My name is George Russick. Before the break, big news in Leafland. Dave Poulin, Claude Loisel, both out as assistant general managers of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Kyle Dubas, he was spent three seasons as the general manager of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, has been named the new assistant general manager to Dave Notice. And here's the kicker for you, Jeff Sammet. He's 28 years old.
I don't know how I feel about that. Because I normally feel pretty good about myself. I'm doing all right. I'm enjoying my life. I'm right where I want to be in my career. Then I hear this.
And do you want?
I'm considerably older than this guy.
And do you want something else that's going to blow your mind?
All right.
Kyle Dubas, is the graduate of the Brock Sport Management Program, the same as producer Travis McKenzie.
Oh, well, Travis should feel worse because he's a complete and utter failure.
Travis
has been a...
There's hope for you. You both graduated the same spot, and you one day might be the assistant GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Travis,
good for you.
How old are you, Travis? Oh, you're the same age.
Wow.
You're the same age as the assistant GM
of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
That makes me sad.
That should make Travis sad. We better keep an eye on Travis.
To talk about the move, Sportsnet NHL insider Chris Johnston jumps on the fly here. Chris, thanks for jumping on. Just out of the blue, a front office shakeup for the Maple Leafs. Did we hear any rumblings about this heading into today?
Well, it's funny, especially around July 1st, when obviously I was phoning around to a lot of agents and things, pursuing where the signings would fall. A few of them had mentioned that they'd heard rumblings of a Leafs front office shakeup, but despite that, I don't think it's entirely surprising to see Claude Loisel and Dave Poulin move on. But certainly, I would never have guessed that Kyle Dubas would be the next guy that would sort of step into the role that they were filling as the assistant GM to Dave Nonis. Excuse me, guys. And really, I mean, it's a pretty massive change in direction for this organization, and quite a compelling move, I would say.
What do you know about Dubas?
Well, I've been aware of his presence, like many on Twitter, and obviously took note of, I think he was 25 when the Sioux Greyhounds hired him as GM, which in itself was fairly notable at the time. But, I don't know him personally, but certainly, what we do know about him is that he is one of the more sort of advanced thinkers in terms of, some of the stats that have come into vogue, around hockey. And one thing we can say about the Leafs' previous regime was that they were not. I can't help but think of a day with Dave Nonis last November. There was a management conference here in Toronto, and he spoke to myself and a couple other reporters about how the Leafs had a budget for a number of years, basically for advanced stats, and that they'd yet to find any way to put it to use, essentially, that they'd heard presentations from a number of people but didn't see value in any of the pitches they saw. And quite clearly, we're a long way from that now, just less than a year later, after a disastrous season for the Leafs possession-wise. I think that this will be the start of some big changes within the organization.
Now, Chris, how do you properly say his last name? Is it Dubas? Is it Dubay? Kyle what? Sorry.
I think it's Dubas, but I can't proclaim to be the expert on that. We'll have to check with the Leafs a little later.
I'm going to go Dubas with you as well. Well, you talked about how he was 25 years old and hired as the GM of the Sioux Greyhounds, and itself, as you mentioned, was unbelievable. How did he get to that point, just being 25 and being a GM of a Canadian Hockey League team?
Well, he grew up in Sault Ste. Marie, and I believe it was his grandfather that had ties to the team. And I think he'd basically spent his life around the Greyhounds. And he'd also spent time prior to that working with a player agent. And I think he'd sort of started to make a name for himself in the industry. And, again, from what I know, without certainly being an expert on his background, is one of the things he did with the Greyhounds is that he ran the team almost entirely based on metrics and numbers. And there's kind of this great divide happening in the game. I'm sure the hardcore hockey fans are aware of it, but hockey for many years has kind of been a bit of an old school culture, I would say, just around the sport in general, and a lot of value placed in things like character, things like going out and watching games. And it's only been recently now that a lot of these numbers of measuring possession and the value of players have started to slowly creep in to some of the decision making, and I think some people have been slow to adopt it. But clearly the Leafs now, I mean, I know he's just the assistant general manager, and it's going to take a little time for him to put his imprint on things here, but I think it signals that the Leafs are going to take a lot more interest in some of the possession numbers and other things that are out there now.
Now we're hearing that the pronunciation of the last name is Dubas, but stay tuned for more on that. I'm sure that'll change.
Is that from a reliable source? Because I don't want to keep saying it the wrong way on radio.
It is from a reliable source,
okay.
Yes. Sam Cosentino. So, hey, if you don't feel that Sam Cosentino is a reliable source, then call him something else.
I am not going to question Sam, even though he's a junior hockey.
So, it sounds to me, based on your explanation and reasoning of this hiring, at least as how you see it, is that Loisel, it's not as if Loisel and Poulin did anything to land them in hot water or have them out of a job at this point, that perhaps this was just a change in thinking, a change in philosophy and how the structure of the front office should look and what the makeup of the front office should look like. And maybe those two in Loisel and Poulin just didn't fit the bill or just didn't bring what someone else would bring, in this case, Dubas.
Well, they're taking the fall a little bit for an underachieving team. I think clearly can't place it squarely on their shoulders, but both guys were here a number of years. They were brought in originally by Brian Burke under the previous regime, and it's only normal when you have a change at the top, as the Leafs have by hiring Brendan Shanahan earlier in the spring, that you'll see changes within the front office. And, you know, I don't think we can look at these two guys and say they're the sole reason this organization is still kind of mired in the mud, but they're certainly a part of it. And you know, I think that everyone is kind of wearing that. I mean, we've already seen the Leafs fire their assistant coaches. I know Randy Carlyle was extended, but, you know, it's not a stretch to suggest this is a big season for him in terms of, you know, trying to hold on to his job here in Toronto. And I think even down to the players now, you know, there's a little bit less allegiance to some of the guys, even the ones signed long-term. Once you make a change of this nature, that more changes could come. And you know, I really do think it's the first sort of sign of Brendan Shanahan putting a clear stamp on the organization. And again, I just see it, I'm sure, as one of many changes still to come.
Chris, do you find that out of all the four big sports that maybe hockey has been a little behind this whole metrics craze, and that the Maple Leafs see it now that maybe this is the way to go, and not having the old guard of guys who played in the league for years and years and years, and obviously you can't put a price on experience, but do you see finally hockey as a whole maybe going this route that all the other sports have kind of been already heading towards for a while now?
Yeah, it's pretty clear that hockey in general is going this direction. I mean, we've seen a number of teams hire basically analytics-type people. I mean, they're called different things in each organization, but I think they're all there to do the same job. And one of the reasons, you know, hockey has maybe been a little slower to adapt is I don't think that people found that the numbers, certainly, I mean, baseball is a game that lends itself just by its nature more to being measured by numbers. And I think that it's taken some time maybe for some of these numbers to be developed. And then, you know, after they have been, which, you know, isn't exactly a new phenomenon, but to convince people of their value, I think it's taken a little bit of time. But I mean, it's pretty clear now. I mean, we can almost stop calling them advanced statistics because, for one, they're not really that advanced, you know, once you take some time to learn them, and which I have specifically in the last year. And, you know, what's interesting for me about the Leafs in general is that, you know, back in October when they ran up a good record, and even throughout the year when things were going okay, you know, the advanced stat community was pointing out a lot of the Leafs' flaws, and the Leafs sort of thought that they could outrun their flaws, I guess, by having, you know, some sharp shooting forwards, and they were getting great goaltending for a lot of the year from Jonathan Bernier, which helped them, you know, maybe patch over some of those things. But, you know, now it's essentially they were dismissing some of the criticisms against them because they were winning games despite being a good possession team. And now, you know, to me, this is a beginning of an acknowledgement that things have to change on that front. And not only are they not dismissing it, the peers are going to welcome, you know, some of that way of building a team. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that means for the roster here moving forward.
Sportsnet's Chris Johnston. We'll see what's next with the Toronto Maple Leafs and find out more about this as the show goes on. Thank you, Chris, for this. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Have a good show.
And Gord Dineen canceled of the Toronto Marlies for next hour, given this news. So we'll get Gord on later in the week. And obviously, we didn't talk Cavs this hour, but we will another day with Campy Russell.
So, Kyle Dubas. So, I think
Dubas.
Pretty safe right now that it's Dubas.
Dubas.
And he's 28 years old.
28.
And he's now the assistant GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that old, but I'm feeling old right now.
No, you are.
Thanks. Bob Nightingale, national baseball writer for USA Today, will join us straight ahead, and we'll try to dive more into this Maple Leaf story, but big news out of Leaf fan. This is the Jeff Blair Show. That's Jeff Salmon. My name is George Russick, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.